related to this 2D materials and their heterostructures. And this is related to the twisted cuprate. I should apologize first because I supposed to be my office to do this one, but due to some traveling schedule that I'm stuck into my dorm room in New York City, and internet here is a little bit intermittent. So if there is something freeze out, just let me know that I will just kind of try to do my best to just recover, okay? So let me start with introducing collaborator. This is kind of the most important, I think, or actually not the collaborator, the work that the people that, who did actually the work. I'm just a sales person here. The most important person here is Frank Zhao. He just graduated and did start kind of postdoc work at MIT. But Frank actually came from Canada, the University of Toronto, that carry out this most of the experiment I'm going to talk about out of a few years of the really development. And in the 80s with many others in the circle here, Yuval, Rebecca, and Alex, and Junyoung, and Hyobin. And these are the experimental collaborator, and of course here, the Nicola. And then theory collaboration, that we have the Pavel Volkov, Jed Pixley at the Rutgers, and then Marcel Francis Group at the UBC contribute a lot to make us understanding the data that we obtain in this system. All right, so let me start with this general story about twisted, the 2D materials. I think that story started with this graphene twisted system or graphene on boron nitride. And because of this weak van der Waals interaction, in principle, you can just take the same 2D materials and put them together with a twist angle. And then we get this pattern called the moire, which actually defined the large length scale of the quasi-periodicity. And this quasi-periodicity depends on the twisting angle. And this is a way that you can engineer that new electronic properties on the top of this, what nature give us as its own electronic property of the 2D materials. And in fact, this starting from, say, twisted the bilayer graphene, and especially magic, so-called magic angle twisted bilayer graphene, which actually pioneered by the Pablo Jarrero's group at MIT, where they show that the so-called magic angle twisted bilayer graphene, the twist angle of the 1.1 degree, somehow the graphene becomes an correlated insulators at certain filling fractions, and then dope this correlated insulator, the graphene becomes superconductor, which actually came as an extreme surprise. Part of the reason is, well, graphene has a kind of low electron density in there, general. I think it's not preferable to develop the superconductivity, and likely this superconductivity appeared in this graphene system is quite unusual, and that sparked out this the tons of the research activities in past 4 years, and you've been seeing a lot of exciting story developed in this twisted graphene bilayer and some of the 2D materials. In some sense, my stories that take on that same kind of very similar motivations from here, that getting these twisted structures onto the, or twisted stacking structures on the 2D material, you may comes around that something that you didn't expect it in the single material. And that twisted material that I'm going to discuss about is this cuprate, especially bismuth strontium calcium copper oxide cuprate superconductor, which is a very nice 2D measurable material as well, because if you look at these crystal structures, there's this unit cell, there's a bismuth oxide layer, which actually hold by the van der Waals interactions. So from early on this cuprate study, BISCO has been quite useful tool because of this cleavage layer of the van der Waals interface that just provide us nice, the surface that STM or RPS and other type of study has been done, right? And here's a TM image shows that indeed in this, the wide layers and between these two layers, this is a weak van der Waals interaction. There's no chemical bond between them. So you can in principle cleave them to expose a larger surface area. And that can serve as a kind of interesting tool to study about kind of interesting physics. Because of this van der Waals interaction, a few years ago, around 2018 or 2019, Yanbo Zhang's group at the Fudan University demonstrated kind of really beautiful result where they cleave down this BISCO crystals down to monoatomic layer, or actually half unit cell, which actually contains this two copper oxygen plane. And yet they demonstrated transport measurement showing that everything you see in the bulk is more or less already confined in the half unit cell, right? TC compared with the bulk sample does not degrade too much. And even just this round off, plasmonic coming to affect the fluctuation of superconductivity also kind of present in the monolayer, very similar to the bulk, indicating that bulk is basically consists of, you can think about in terms of the transport, consists of the bunch of this parallel combination of the half unit cell of this physical. So that shows that the extreme two-dimensionality of the physical here. But then next step that we can think about is like the graphene, the twisted bilayer. In principle, you can start a study about this monolayer of the BISCO, but also you can think about stacks of the half unit cell, but kind of with a twisting angle. And in fact, that is probably the strong motivations that at least the theorists try to explore this type of possibility. And the last year that we've been seeing that there are these very nice two theory work. One coming from the Marcel Francis group at the Rutgers, they published in the Nature Physics in last year, exactly coming out the idea that what would happen when you make the twist stacks of the BISCO or the cuprates. At about the same time, there's an archive paper also done by the Pavel Borkov, and then in the JET Pixelay group, publishes kind of related work or the positive related work in the archive. When we saw these papers in the archive, we suddenly realized that these papers actually answer some of the data that we've been sitting on about more than half a year to try to understand, coming out of our experimental efforts that took out the several years of this Frank's efforts, that basically get part of the answer from this paper. And we got so excited and we made the collaboration with them right away and tried to come up with this interpretation of the data that we accumulated in past a few years. So that's basically the story I'm going to share with you, what type of this the physics will get when you just twist it, the cuprate. All right, so let me start with this story. So we kind of briefly remind you that what we expect, what is a common belief that we have onto the cuprate. So if you just kind of simplify the electronic structure of a cuprate, here just I'm showing you that 2D, the Brillouin zone of the cuprates and Kx and Ky. And this is basically the usual Fermi surface you can see. And as you see here, that Fermi surface shapes were like they kind of give you kind of hole like the Fermi surface there, right? It's widely believed that superconducting order parameter of the cuprate is likely the D wave order parameter. We are going to kind of discuss that in a moment. But assuming that is a D wave order parameter and tied with this cuprate, the Fermi surface. It turns out this order parameter will give you so-called nodal point where the superconducting gap is a collapse, and that collapsing gap, it turns out that it's in the middle of this Fermi arc. You see in the Fermi surface, and that if you just write down the volume of the Zhang Hamiltonians about the near this the nodal point, you can see that this volume of the Zhang Hamiltonian, because there's a gap this compared with this the spectrum, in fact that this Hamiltonian is more like indeed the off diagonal elements mimic this direct like the spectrums that what we see in the normal electrons of energy dispersion relation. So you already quickly see that when we discuss about superconducting order parameters, especially when you discuss about the bowl of the Hamiltonian structures near the nodal point, there must be some sort of this Dirac-like Hamiltonian we have to deal with. And moreover, when you just kind of combine them together to make this twist stacks, very similar stories when people use about this twisted graphene bilayer, and then hybridizations of the Dirac spectrums in top and bottom layer type of story will go through the very similar way. Indeed, those kind of two theories that I just mentioned is basically solving this type of this hybridized Dirac Hamiltonian of the Boglio of Dejang dispersions. In the connections with this simple the tunneling elements of the quasi particles from the top and bottom layer, the parameterized by the G. By solving this one, they obtain that what would be the visual thing. The superconducting order parameter should look like. And that's basically what this theory actually tells us. According to theory, so when there's you have the small twisting angle, let's start with the zero twisting angle, it's basically just kind of physical layers. And of course, you expect to see that just a D wave order parameters everywhere, that if you assume that D wave order parameter. If you start to give it a very small twisting angle, in fact, that you basically get into the D plus another D wave, but because now that the twisting angle, that there's just a little bit of a component. If you start with the dx square minus y square as the original order parameter, then you start to have the, because of this small twisting angle, you may start to get the very small component dxy from there, right? But then if you just kind of do this up to the really extreme twisting angle, and the most extreme twisting angle is exactly in between, the 0 degree and 90 degree, that when you have the 45 degrees of the twisting, and then you start to see that at least the top layer or the bottom layer, whatever you rotate it away from this original layer, can be described as dxy type of order parameter, right? I think dxy is a kind of complete dominant. But also, since now your layer is kind of rotated 45 degree, that if you consider that phase of those kind of rotation, that order parameter there, if you just kind of project this order parameter, is that naturally dx square minus y square plus I times the dxy. So in a sense, this becomes d plus id type of the order parameter space. And it's been known that once you get to the D plus ID, at that point, basically you have to open up the gap into this system. And depends on the coupling in the certain cases, this gap can be even just a topological gap with this topological edge states kind of appears into this type of the system. So the theory becomes quite exciting in some sense. So what is expected is then you have the unusual order parameter, especially as you just kind of increase this twisting angle between these two cuprate layers. Once you get into this D plus ID also, whether or not it's a topological, regardless of the topological structures, D plus ID, because of this complexness of this order parameter, obviously you are allowed to have the D plus I, D minus ID as well, which is a time reversal, the pair of the D plus ID. So if you just choose a D plus ID or D minus ID, D minus ID, you get this time reversal symmetry is broken in the superconductivity. So one of the strong indication is such a D plus ID superconductivity strongly tied with the time reversal broken superconductivity in this type of the system. So this is a rather kind of exciting news. In fact, that then as an experimentalist, you may ask that indeed, if there is the time reversal symmetry broken superconductivity sets in, especially near this 45 degree, what is the experimental evidence we can just take on? One of the experimental evidence that you can take on is if you just look at this Boglio of Dejang free energy spectrums out of this type of the spectrum calculation, quickly this spectrum actually developed the interesting structures, especially as a function of the twisting angle. At the kind of lower twisting angle, basically you get this normal Ginzburg-Landau free energies. In other words, basically you have this current phase relation or free energy phase relation. Just follow that as a phi, that which is basically the phase difference between the top and bottom layer that goes from the 0 to 2 pi, that this free energy will go to the kind of periodic structures into the 2 phi. 2 pi. However, when you just start to increase the twisting angle, and especially near the 45 degrees, where that basically pair tunnelings of this Cooper pair becomes important, and then there is an additional phase actually appears, and this free energy start to kind of develop this two minimums there. as well as its period, this thing actually changed into this 4 pi. In other words, if you just look at this, the column phase relation, there is a kind of definite phase change, the frequency change, or period and phase period actually changes between these two cases. And that depends on the twist angle, especially when the twist angle is getting close to 45 degrees. And all these things indicating that indeed, once you build up this the twisted cuprate junction, one should be able to find this, the basically gradual change from 0 degree twisting angle to the 45 degree of twisting angle, especially near the 45 degree twist angle. We may be able to see that quite unusual superconductivity appears that hinted this time reverse symmetry broken superconductivity in there. So basically, that's basically experiment we kind of set it out to go. In terms of the experiment of this 45 degree twisted junction, in fact, this is a subject that has been done many, many years, by the way. And the reason that this was a kind of favorite subject experimentally that tried to do, even in the 30 years ago, is clear because this is one way also you can prove the D-wave superconducting order parameter from the beginning. Indeed, many years ago, early 90s, when there has been heated debates about the superconducting order parameter of the cuprate, whether it's a D-wave, S-wave, or the various different combination, one of the experimental proposals is indeed you just build up this twisted junctions of this bisco or the cuprate, and try to look at this Josephson critical current there, and whether this Josephson critical current shows any angular dependence of the twist angle. And very naive idea, even without any complicated theory calculation, if this if the D wave superconductor, and if you just stay in the 45 degree, basically, that's maximally the misaligned the superconducting order parameter. You expect to see that expect, in fact, a drastic decrease of the Josephson supercurrents across the junction. And that's basically what people hope to see in this type of experiment. I'm showing you here that experiment published in the late 90s, but although this can be traced in even early 90s, some of the experiments, where people claim these two bisco layers and glue it down around the 45 degrees and measure this the Josephson critical current as a function of this twist angle. And what you see here is except this one of this outliers, they see that more or less angle independent Josephson current throughout the system. And this is one of the experiment that support that indeed superconducting order parameter might be S wave in here, right? This experiment, in fact, has been repeated multiple times because there are other experimental evidence, strong experimental evidence indicating that our superconducting order parameter is a D wave. And nevertheless, this twist experiment is not supporting that. So it was repeated multiple times. And every time it was repeated, and depends on who did that, the result can be quite different. And this is yet another result shortly a few years after, and they made this the bisco whiskers and they make this twist junction. In this particular case, they see that there is strong angular dependence of the twist angle with the critical current, supporting it seems like the D wave type of the order parameter. It was repeated by another group, but then there is no angular dependence. Right, and even just repeated only a year or 2 years ago with all this kind of new technique of the Van der Waals heterostructure arrived, and this is a Xinghua group's result showing that they did many devices there, and then they see that the critical current is spread over the many of the different magnitude, even order magnitude, but there is no particular angular dependence, and also they present that this is preferably that indicating S-wave superconductors. Now, I don't want kind of comments on all of these things, these experiments separately. As you see here, that these are that all kind of, you gain the sense that everybody get it kind of different result. Why we want to add on other data points, which probably different from everybody else. One point I want to kind of re-emphasize here that will make the kind of our experiments method is a little bit different, which I'm going to spend a little bit of time, is when you make this type of junction, and even all the experiments here, and including the very recent experiment where they showed this nice cross-sectional TM image of the sample, clearly indicating that interfacial quality is extremely important. I think, and how that you can maintain the experimental the quality is really important, and that's part of the reason this experiment shows that this interface indicating they have the really atomic scale of the interface up to the, this interface. But even there, if you just look at very carefully, here up to here is a BISCO, up to there is a BISCO, but they actually present here, it's a little bit more amorphous-like the structures, as you see also in this one. And this Chima group's result indicating that there are about kind of three or four more layers of the bismuth oxide layers there, indicating there might be some of the this degradation of the interface. Either interface is a little bit different from bulk, that bulk part of the sample, and that's kind of strongly indicated in these TM images. Part of the reason that the interface is a little bit different from the bulk is once they just assemble this type of the interface, they always have to anneal their sample to restore this the supercurrents in there. And this thermal annealing will make the, all this interdiffusion of the atomic atoms near the interfaces, as well as more importantly, the oxygen contents might be changed at the interface, which may actually quite changes of the Josephson coupling. It's kind of different at the interfaces. And that's probably presumably the reason that why experimental to experiments, there are so much of this variation in the system. So the overcoming this type of the technical difficulties that what we have to do is somehow we have to come up with a better way to deal with the sample and create this really pristine interface as much as possible. And that's what Frank Zhao spent many years, actually 2 or 3 years to develop these techniques I'm going to present in next kind of 5 minutes. So the first thing we have to realize is we have to really cleave and make the, all of these devices in the extremely controlled environments. So the, when you just cleave the BISCO, they actually, although this Van der Waals interface, they are quickly degraded once it just interacts with the water and oxygen into the, this, the environment. So you have to really dispel this water. Especially water completely from the system. Here, that basically we build up this the glow box tied with the all these evaporators and device fabrication units. But especially in the glow box, so to reduce the extra water contents well below that what commercial glow box can offer, we have to go through the special way that. Just kind of pump, filter it through this liquid nitrogen and then all this kind of special technique is needed to really reduce the water contents into the glow box. And furthermore, since we cannot just process device fabrication in conventional device fabrication in clean room, basically we have to build up the clean room type of this the fabrication technique work inside of the glow box and that this evaporator suite. And especially this lithography is done by complete dry method using stencil mask lithography, which eventually allows us to fabricate rather complicated devices with sharply defined down to several micron or down to even some micron scale of the electrode can be fabricated and combined with this device structures. I think that's basically important task we have. But perhaps the most important critical point is preparing the sample itself. It turns out the preparing sample cannot be done even with the controlled environments in the room temperature. Part of the reason is if you just cleave this crystal in the room temperature, you start to lose oxygen at the surface. It's a very well-known fact for the people doing the STM. So they cleave this in the relative cold temperature. So we basically have to cleave this crystal and do this fabrication, all these things in the low temp, low enough temperature, at least kind of below 50 C, negative 50 C and even further. And for that, basically, we have to come up with the so-called cold cleaving method using this PDMS in the cold stages and cooling down all the stages in liquid nitrogen. Out of this kind of really painstaking method, Frank eventually succeeded to develop this way to fabricate the devices and cleave the crystals and reassemble with the control angle and do additional fabrication to make the Josephson junction and wire about it. And these all kind of has been done into the well-controlled environment. And that result is basically I'm showing in this slide. I'm showing here that after we reassemble the structures, that we basically cut some of the device try to look at the interface. And this is basically device we cut into the for the cross-section TM images. You see that this is a first physical layer and second physical layer. So it is not a mono layer. It is kind of a few layers of the physical, but basically stack them together, make this interface, right? And this is about the micron length scale. And typical device we are getting is about the lateral size of the few micron, right? So this is, you can see that interface is extremely clean, that as you see in this kind of large field of view. But if you zoomed in that this is a field of view and more, you start to see that I start to see that this physical atomic scale of physical one and physical two, bottom layer, top layer, they are about 45 degrees rotated. So that's why the periodic structures coming from the supermodulations along the A direction. And this is the cutting along the A direction. So you don't see the supermodulation, but clearly see that interface is it's really sharp. But important part is if you just zoom in that interface, this is a bottom layer and top layer. And basically this is a really bismuth oxide layer coming from top, from the bottom. As you see here is there's a basically pristine layers exactly in contact with them, each other, without any additional the foreign materials in between. And this is basically the key to produce some of the effects that we are seeing that in the next probably 20 minutes I'm going to discuss. Right. So once you get this type of the pristine devices, we can just measure their the transport properties in the following way. So this is a device that we cut it off, but just kind of put it back, translate and put it back. So this is so-called the 0-degree twist. So in 0-degree twist, there is no twist angle, but since it is cleaved and not be attached, maybe atomic registry might be a little bit different from each other, but nevertheless, we can create this type of the junctions between them, right? And note that we make the contact, already here is pre-made contacts in there. When we cleave the crystal two and put it down, we put it down to make this contact in there. And there are two contacts. And then after this cleavage, we make another contact onto the crystal one, such that now we have in principle, this multiple contact on crystal one and crystal two. What you can do is basically using this two contacts, we can measure the electrical property of the crystal two. Using these two contacts, we can measure the electrical property of crystal one. So basically we can measure bulk transport property of the crystal one and crystal two separately. But then using this contact and this contact, we can measure the transport properties across this crystal two, crystal one, across this Van der Waals interface, right? So basically, if there is a Josephson junction form, then we should be able to see that Josephson characteristic using these two electrodes, right? And this is basically temperature dependent. The resistance we measure that those kind of crystal one and crystal two and across the junctions. What is the important part is, of course, across junction resistance is a little bit higher because it goes through this interface. But note here, their superconducting transition is almost the same as a crystal one and crystal two. And there is no TC changes compared with the bulk crystal. And this is indicating that whatever this interface Josephson junction we created, they are extremely good quality. Their TC is very close to this bulk crystal. So that's kind of number one, right? But also, if you just kind of bias the Josephson junction, then one can just see that Josephson IV characteristic across this junction, right. So what you see here is as I just sweep through the current and the voltages start to develop at a certain kind of critical current. And then when you come down, there is a hysteric behavior and the retrapped and just kind of switching on. Anyone just know about the Josephson junction? This is a typical Josephson IV characteristic with a relatively large hysteresis due to that. This is the underdamped Josephson junction, which indicating there is a kind of reasonably large capacitance couplings into this junction. An important part is this, the switching current is basically indicating that the Josephson supercurrent and how this is critical current is scale with the temperatures and areas and those kind of things tells us important information about this Josephson junctions. Right. So one thing we can just kind of point out is this critical current, if I just convert into the critical current density, is in fact actually a little bit smaller, but comparable to the critical current density one can get in the Bok-Josephson Bok crystal along the C directions. It's been studied quite widely that if you have the viscous crystal and sending the current along the C direction, they start to show also Josephson characteristics, as shown in that one of this paper that I just kind of copied on all the work, right? But then this critical current shows a kind of multiple steps, and due to the so-called the breakdown of this intrinsic Josephson junction, and depends on how many layer you have, that you have the kind of quite different number of the branch appears into intrinsic Josephson junctions. And very similar things we are seeing here, except that we are seeing the one critical current indicating that indeed this is a weakest Josephson junction. The critical current density is a little bit smaller, but comparable to what has been seen in the intrinsic Josephson junction, tells us that the quality of the junction at the 0 degree is probably not too bad, as we see in the TM images that I showed you before. Okay, now what we can do is we can just repeat this experiment with many, many different Josephson junction with a different the twisting angle, and ask that how this critical current will change with the temperatures. Basically, that's kind of what we are seeing. Again, for this 0 degree twisted Josephson junction, this is a color map of this dV and dI, which means the dark blue color is where basically you have the zero resistance and critical current is flowing. And historic behavior has been seen, the current sweep is in that direction. Basically, this is critical the critical current, and this is trapping the current, right? As you increase the temperature, right, and this critical current starts to decrease and collapse down at the TC around probably 85 or 86 Kelvin. So that's basically this temperature, the map that I'm showing you, that how the critical current is scaled with the temperature. So in the next slide, I'm going to show you that very similar experiment, like this color map. Let me try to see that I can. Okay. This type of the color map measured in the many, many different junctions. So I'm showing you about the 24 different junctions we created with a different twisting angle that marked down and basically, theta here is basically different the critical angle that the critical angles, but as a function of the current sweep as well as the temperature, and then you see that fairly basically all these different angle indicate showing the different type of the result. So that's kind of already kind of one indication here that I collect about the 24 junctions. In fact, the statistics even more by now. Theta angle stages the ranges from the 0 to 180 degree, right? And one thing that immediately here that you can see is their behavior looks quite different. But if you just kind of focus on their critical current, is about the same. Critical temperature is about the same. So here that I'm showing the statistic I made out of this 24 device and statistic over the what is a critical temperature of the disjunction, or where that basically I lose completely the Josephson junction, as a function, then you see that that most of the junctions, although they show the wide range of the difference of the critical current, their TC is about kind of close to 84 Kelvin, and with about two degrees of the spread, indicating indeed TC itself is really following through their Bok values, although they have the wide range of the behavior difference in terms of the critical current behavior as a function of temperatures. One thing that I can also present onto this wide range of the difference is the following. So let's say that what it looks like that when you just kind of take the critical current at some of this low enough temperatures, let's say 12 Kelvin or 30 Kelvin, as a function of this twist angle difference. What you see in there, that the critical current density, which often that you can just obtain by IC times of normal resistance of the RM, then basically this quantity does not depend on the area. They show this nice angular dependence. From 0 to 180 degree, you can map that in reasonably below between 0 to 90 degree by subtracting that 90 degree from 90 to 180 degree, they basically follow through this nice angular dependence where near the 45 degree or the mode of the mode 90 of the 45 degree, the critical current is really reduced compared with it kind of this low twisting angle. And this the behavior is reasonably, not exactly, follow through the cosine 2 theta, where theta is a twisting angle, which is naively expected when you have this twisted physical junctions, right? So the immediate thing that we can say that is indeed that there is a strong suppression of the critical current at 45 degree, what is expected in the D-wave, and then there is this angular dependence. It seems like it kind of reasonably supporting the idea of the D-wave order parameter. In fact, there's much strong arguments one can make. D-wave is the likely to support the arguments coming from the not only just angular dependence or the temperature dependence of the critical current behavior. I'm showing you here that again, ICRN has a functional temperature for different twisting angle. Here's a 0 degree that we just discussed, but as you just increase the twist angle, it shows a rather interesting temperature dependence of this the critical current. In fact, that in the intermediate angles around the 29 degree or the 39 degree, you see that there's a really weird critical current. In fact, is increasing as increasing temperature and shows a maximum somewhere and start to decrease beyond that temperature and collapse down to the zero around this GC, right? So this type of behavior, this non-monotonic behavior, is something quite unusual and just kind of kept us quite a long time trying to understand what is going on there. And out of these theory groups, so we now have the quite kind of the quantitative, at least close quantitative description, what is going on onto this intermediate angle. So let me first try to summarize what is experimental result. So experimental result is something like that between zero to something like half of the 45 degree, around the 20 degrees. So we see that the critical current is monotonically decreased, so following through the more or less Ambergaukar Baratov type of the description, the critical current is decreasing with a decreasing, increasing temperature. However, around this the 20 degrees, basically something changes. In other words, basically slope of the critical current that initially, especially as a function of temperature increases, which means that critical current is monotonically initially increasing with the increasing temperature, which actually shows slope of the DRDT in the positive, but then shows a maximum. And after that maximum temperature, it starts to drop, right? And that's kind of trend that we have, right? But also at the 45 degree, as I mentioned, that critical current is strongly suppressed, but note that it's not zero. Non-zero supercurrent still, it is about order of magnitude or even two order of magnitude that decreases compared with the 0 degree twist junctions, but still that finite supercurrents actually flow through up to this kind of high temperature 90 degrees. So that's basically experimental summary of temperature dependence. How do you understand this one? In fact, this is coming back to the current and phase relations expected into this twisted cooperate junction. As I mentioned, theory already kind of nicely write down coming from this volume of the energy spectrum computed from the twisted layer. If you just write down the free energies and take the derivative of the free energy with the phase, you get this, what is the supercurrent that should look like, where this phase of the phi is controlled by the bias voltages. If you just look at the spectrum and compute it out, it actually has kind of these nice structures where that especially that this part is turns out to kind of positive definite, which means that supercurrent actually depends on this sum of this multiple of this supercurrent order parameter between top and bottom layer, average over this the Fermi surface, right? But note that in the D-wave order parameter, when you start kind of rotate this D-wave order parameter, that order parameter, because of the score across a nodal point, change the sign from positive to negative, right? But since now, do you have to apply these two other parameters together, it. Once they are kind of closely overlap each other, they all kind of make the sign change about the same time. Therefore, that this becomes again kind of the positive, right? But once you start kind of rotating, especially when the antinodal point of this Fermi surface start to overlap each other, now then you have this nodal components here that which is always kind of positive. But if you once hit kind of get into the antinodal component, you start kind of develop the different signs into the this product, and which actually start to compete between the nodal component and antinodal component. And precise theoretical calculation, considering this twisting angle, that whether nodal component and antinodal component, indeed predict that in certain intermediate twist angle or under 20 degrees, that what the experimenter see, that because of this computation, that the critical current versus temperature start kind of develop this such as non-monotonic behavior, which actually showing the experiments. So, because of this the monotonic behavior, in a sense, observation is basically coming from this the competition of the nodal point and antinodal point, combined with this the 45 degrees, the strong suppression of the supercurrent with this non-monotonic behavior of the intermediate angle, in some sense strongly support that indeed the D wave order parameter is what can drive the such a unusual the Josephs junction we are seeing the twisted junctions. Okay, so that's basically kind of nice, but assuring the argument showing the D wave that order parameter. Now, assuming okay, now after with this D wave order parameter, let's now kind of take the detailed look at what happens at the 45 junctions. As I mentioned, at 45 junction, supercurrent is drastically reduced, but it's still finite. Indeed, when you take the IV characteristic of this 45 junctions, well, you start to see that kind of significant amount of this supercurrent is still do exist there. And then once you get into this finite critical current, it just restore back to this finite resistance. Again, it look like this kind of nicely behaving Josephs junctions. And you already noticed that compared with this low twist angle, the hysteric behavior is much more reduced. Now, if you just look at this, the temperature-dependent behavior, again, this is temperatures and this is a critical current axis. Now, you see that those are the blue lines, which correspond to the zero, the voltage or the supercurrent region, is persist up to the really high temperature, only close the TC, start kind of decrease down and collapse down at the TC around kind of 85 Kelvin. So again, it's a reduced scale, but the Josephs junction is there. But what kind of strikes us is when just kind of we look at this Josephs characteristic with the in-plane magnetic field. When you apply the in-plane magnetic field into these junctions and try to look at this Josephs characteristic, we start to see that beautifully developed this the Fraunhofer patterns that with kind of well-defined periodicity appears. And from there on, that we can extract informations about this the periodicity or that the effective area that associated with Josephs junction. Note that this is C-axis penetration, magnetic penetration length is longer. It's a long. So to analyze this periodicity, we have to basically go through the careful analysis, including this power length along the C-axis. But nevertheless, we get kind of decent the thicknesses that expected from this the Josephs junctions, which actually more likely matched with this area. So that's kind of good. So at least we get the really high quality Josephs junction exists up to this 50 degree. Now, important part is what is the effective area tells us. Indeed, if we see that this the periodicity of the increased periodicity of the Josephs and current phase relation, this area should tell us about the informations about the periodicity. Unfortunate part is that since we don't have the really precise estimation about the penetration length scale in the C-axis, that quantitative analysis based on this well-defined periodicity about the Josephs phase relation is already limited. However, we can compare this with the Josephs junctions we made away from the 45 degree. And here is Joseph's junction, we made a 43 degree of the rotation. Already in the 43 degrees, only 2 degrees away from this 45 degree, the frontal patterns we get is rather different. It is much more the wide periodicities and not well-defined structures. And although there's some small kind of oscillation is there, and it's kind of rather different. And in fact, if you just kind of extract this relative the length scale, this indicating the thicknesses or the junction length scale is much smaller than what we observe in the 45 degrees. In fact, if you just analyze this or the compare this data kind of rather carefully with so-called this intrinsic Joseph's junction, which has been studied quite kind of a lot in the bulk Joseph's junction, bulk Biscoe Joseph's junctions. Basically, behavior is very similar to what has been seen in the bulk Joseph's junctions, and indicating that what we are seeing here is not too far from the what has been seen in the intrinsic Joseph's junctions. Again, you may see that this is a little bit qualitative descriptions, but at least we see that 45 degrees and away, the only 2 degrees away from the 45, the behavior is rather different. However, once you get in the intermediate, so something like the 46.3, so this is about 1.3 degrees away from 45 degree, you start to see that behavior of this frontal pattern is rather different, right? It has a characteristic of this 45 degrees or close to 45 degree. It has also characteristic of this intrinsic Joseph's junction type of the behavior. And combined of the distincts, indicating indeed that we have the basically combined two contribution. One is basically this second order contribution coming from 2.5. Now one is this first order contribution is intermixed in between that they close to 45 degree and away from 45 degree. We indirectly pointing out, indeed, we have the, probably these two contributions where that this contribution is basically giving the contributions of about the time reverse asymmetric broken supercommutative. Right. Is there a way that we can show this one more quantitative way for direct access of the Josephson current phase relation? There is indeed a way. The way that we can just do that is just look at this microwave response of this Josephson current. In other words, the Shapiro step measurement. We know that when there is a current phase relation showing here, that once you bias your Josephson junction with the AC and create the AC Josephson junction, especially using the AC bias, basically that the current start to develop the AC the response. But if this the bias AC voltages, the frequency is well tuned with the bias, the DC bias voltages. And basically you can cancel it out in the configurations such that you get the DC response as a stepwise response, and which actually shows up as a Shapiro step. And Shapiro step is in a sense the important tool that you can just kind of look at, especially the periodicity of the current and the phase relation. In fact, that's why, that for example, that when you have the topological insulator and superconductor and try to create a topological superconductivity out of it, where that you expect that one of the signature is the Josephson characteristic shows a 4 pi of the characteristic rather than 2 pi due to this topological protection. People naturally look for that this Shapiro steps as missing of this periodicity, making Shapiro step as a 4 pi of the periodicities. On the other hand, if you have this the additional phase the relation, such as a phase slip appears in the superconducting nanowires, people expect to see that additional phase, additional Shapiro step appears, especially in the fractional Shapiro steps related with this kind of higher harmonics appears of the phase slips. So in a sense, if we just use this Shapiro step measurement, what we expect to see in our junction is basically because of the Josephson phase current relation is the phase double, that we expect to see that half fraction, the Shapiro step in the half integer steps. Basically, that is kind of what is expected. Indeed, if you just took that near 45 degrees of junction, here it's only 4.5 degrees away from the 45 degree, and apply this the RF frequency into the stem. You have to go to the extremely high frequency, like the 50 gigahertz ish, to overcome this plasma the going beyond the plasma plasma frequency, Joseph's plasma frequencies. You start to see that this IV characteristic shows this step behavior. And if you just analyze the step, you have the well-developed integer steps, but in between you have the really well-developed this half-integer Shapiro step, indicating indeed the half-integer Shapiro steps appears there with the well the scale with the applied the AC frequencies, indicating indeed around the 45 degree that we have this additional periodicity appears. That indicating that the time reversal symmetry broken superconductivity appears in this type of system. We can compare this system with away from the 45 degree again. Indeed, away from the 45 degree, so only kind of 1.3 degrees away. We washed out all these sharp half integer Shapiro steps here, only very close to the 45 degree that this 45 the sharp half integer Shapiro step appears. Of the half integer Shapiro step, strongly again support that this is only the junctions near the 45 degrees that display such an unusual effect. All right, so I think that my time is almost up. So let me just summarize that what has been seen. So I just kind of report that that we have now the experimental technique developed that we can create a really pristine that for the twisted the Q-plate junctions with a kind of well controlled this the twisting angle between them. And the first thing we see that is that the critical current dependence with the angle and the temperature strongly support that the superconducting order parameter is indeed kind of D wave in this visco Q-plate. And moreover, that through the Fraunhofer patterns as well as the fractional the Shapiro step measurement, of the sample close of 45 degrees, they're strongly indicating that superconductivity, the Josephson interfacial superconductivity, that which actually appears in this the Josephson junction at the 45 degree twisted sample, indicating that there is the doubling of this period of the current phase relation, indicating that there is a time reversal symmetry broken superconductivity setting. Now, what is the next directions that we have to go? There are a few things we can go. That for now that we just kind of study about the 45 degrees, but in fact the theory expected away from the 45 degree, especially at the low twisting angle, like the graphene physics, there's a magic angle do exist that once there that you can also induce very similar time reversal symmetry broken superconductivity as well as potentially topological superconductivity by controlling the Josephson current through this two layer. And that's kind of another interesting, that this current induced these topologies that in some of twisted bilayer graph, twisted the visco is kind of interesting directions to go. You may actually want to kind of look at a more direct way, just proving the current phase relation throughout the squid type of the experiment. Indeed, one can build up the squid based on this unusual superconductivity and try to explore this the current phase relation. That's kind of one of the directions to go. If indeed this superconductivity is topological, such as that they carry the edge state, since this edge state is supposed to be neutral, one should be able to detect it with some of the other way, such as the quantized thermal hole type of the signal. So one can envision do the sum of the thermal transport type of the experiments into this type of the twisted visco layer. Furthermore, there are other type of the experimental tools that indeed try to detect the time reverse broken time reverse symmetry, for example, such as a core rotation measurement or that the RMCD type of the measurement. Then this type of the experimental tool can be quite useful too. Maybe study about this type of the twisted layer. So basically what I'm saying here is now I think that not only just a regular twisted, the 2D materials, that we should welcome this, the visco another Van der Waals superconductor, as it can building up something that very interesting twisted layered system. So with that, let me just kind of thank again the all the students postdoc working on this project, and thank you for your attention. I'm happy to answer some of your questions.
Thank you very much for a great talk. So this talk is open to questions and comments. Maybe I can start with a simple question. So do you think that there is no like domain between like D plus ID or D minus ID kind of?
Yes, I think that there is certainly a kind of domain-like the structures may exist. I think at this point, our measurement is along the C axis and kind of all average the sample. So mm-hmm. they are not necessarily sensitive to the kind of domain type of the structures. Perhaps that this reduced current density is something to do with the kind of almost near the cancellation domain. There is a kind of some of the possibilities, but at this point, our experiment is not sensitive to a domain like this.
Okay.
Yeah. That is very good questions. Yeah.
Thank you. So next question is from Senke. Go ahead, Senke.
This is a very beautiful result. So actually, is there anything interesting seen so far in the antiferromagnetic state when you twist the qubits?
I think that's another the exciting point that one may need to do the kind of further studies. Our experiment is only Josephson junctions, and I don't see that the way that we can detect anything about that kind of magnetic the properties. Now, the one thing is that when theorists actually compute this part, I think that they went through the first principle calculation where that all those kind of spin textures included. As far as I know, that there is not drastic changes that one may expect, right?
Uh-huh.
So there is a question from Paul.
Yeah.
Paul?
Yeah.
Yes, Philip. Very nice talk. I think, did I understand correctly that your samples had several of the 2D layers?
That's right, correct. Yes.
And how the results depend on, do you have any idea or is there an expectation of what will happen when you just have two of them?
Yeah, so okay, that's also very good questions. I think the theorists actually describe that what is the effect of the multiple layers. I think, of course, it's less ideal than have just kind of just a two layer. But note that our experiment is measuring the Josephson current. I think and also we're sending the current from top of the bottom layer through the bottom of the top layer. So most of the current is kind of confined this the top and bottom layers and going through this interface. So with that, this geometry, the physics is mostly governed by this interfacial layer, although there is a slight modification, especially when you go through the frontal pattern, you have to consider the other layers on the behind. Right, but most of the part, the essential part, especially D plus ID, as far as I know, is not touched by the having the additional layers, the top and bottom. We are working on to get into the extreme thin limits, and as you can imagine, that once you get into the mono layer and cut it out and moving it to the top and just put it there, it requires a bit of more controllability. We don't have it yet. That level of controllability, but we're working hard to kind of push this into the really monolayer limits.
Okay, thank you, Philip.
Yeah.
Great. So next question is from Bhaskaran.
Great talk and great work, Phil. Great. So I have a very short question.
Yeah.
So do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah. So from thermodynamics point of view, suppose you create a 45 degree twisted sample. Do you stabilize a D plus IS thermodynamic state? And has there been any experimental approach to see that? Because Josephson effect is one phenomena, but do you stabilize in the phase diagram a narrow range of D plus IS state.
That's also a very good point. I think I should apologize. At this point, the experiment is Josephson junction. So although I think we drive the Josephson junctions in the limit of the thermodynamic equilibrium, the thermodynamic limits, I cannot say that whether the indeed I have this thermodynamic stability of the D plus ID within the our experiments, right? Because we measure that kind of relatively low current limits, so it's a less driven limit, but nevertheless, the experiment is within that when we have this finite phase difference between top and bottom layer, which actually drive the current. Right. So I, as much as I can say that is theory is that what theory drive is based on that kind of thermodynamic phase and the D plus ID is stabilized. And this is in the case, what is the Joseph current look like? And we can match with that. But I can just trace back that what I experiment is really showing that thermodynamic stability of D plus ID. So again, tied back to the Young-Beck's questions, whether do we expect that kind of domain like the structure, which is actually a natural thing that we can expect. This type of things need kind of further probe, the other type of probe that kind of to see that. Nice thing about the this system, in principle, this is, especially when you get into the monolayer limits, is exposed at the surface. So I can imagine that STM type of the measurement can be done. And kind of give us a little bit more information eventually, right? But that's that much I can say at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, so if there's no other questions, then I'd like to thank Philip again for a very, very interesting talk.